welcome to another episode of Musing Musings. As always, I am Derek. With me is Pat. Pat?
Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Doing fantastic.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I can't complain. Everything's going all right. Just ready to get into this topic. As a fellow artist, I understand this is going to be possibly divisive, but I'm all for it.
Nothing wrong with a little healthy debate.
Yeah, exactly.
No more beef between us. That's also been squashed.
Yeah, it's the third one now.
We're getting over it. So today's episode, we're going to talk about signed, unsigned artists, pros and cons to both, and some notable figures who have been unsigned and what they've done for the music industry. So, you know, let's jump into this because I have feelings about this. I have thoughts about this. I know you do as well, and I know you've been in the fields, in the industry more recently than I have. So you have a really good recent perspective on it. So let's jump in.
Okay.
And we'll just start with our thoughts around the pros and cons, right?
Right.
Let's start with, I think, the more obvious, although not everything is very obvious, but to being signed, or actually, to being signed,
right?
Pros to being signed, right? Let's go off there. So I think a few of the biggest things, I think the biggest point when you're signed up front, and I'm going to be careful with this because money given to artists is tricky. Right. So I think up front, the big pro there is labels will invest money into you in certain ways. Right.
Right.
So I think a lot of the obvious ways they invest into you is they fund studio time. So just recording.
Right.
Sometimes they will, although not as much anymore, but make music videos for you. You'll have a production team. Director, they think about all of that. I guess sometimes you'll be involved in that process, but
most of the time,
sometimes you won't be. Yeah. Touring, all the logistics, if you're a touring act, will be taken care of, along with probably accommodations, depending on how big you are.
Yeah.
Promotion and branding is done for you. So I think it's a lot of the work that, you know, an unsigned artist has to do is done for you. And it's done at a very high level, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense.
It's like a professional level that they're doing these things for you. And I think with that, the last point there, just in terms of what they will do for you, is they absorb a lot of the financial risk up front for you.
Yeah.
And again, that's because they see something in you, they see some potential in you, but really they're thinking about how can we market this person and make as much money as possible off of this person. At the end of the day, that's really what they're trying to do. So I think, you know, from that standpoint, in a financial sense, that's where being signed has a big pro.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could say that, like, when you look at artists that are huge, what we're talking about, whether you're talking about pop artists, whether you're talking about like rappers or bands, a lot of the time the record labels look at you as the product, and they're looking at, yes, you're a person, but they're looking at how can we maximize the like reach of your fans to other fans? How can they make you global? How everything is about stretching your artistry or your whatever it is, your brand, into as much financial return for them. And they're willing to, we've seen this over the course of several decades, where they're willing to use an artist that is a band or a group or an artist or a single person and bend them so much to the point where eventually their careers kind of decline. where they're no longer thinking about whatever genre, whatever artistry, whatever songs, whatever projects or ideas that they would normally be, that what normally gave them their, you know, their success, they're willing to not say drain them, but drain them to the point where it's, there's really nothing left that's original, because all they're trying to do is maximize monetary value. And it's kind of like, it sucks in a sense that that's the nature of the beast, if that makes sense. Like, that's what, how we reduce artists or a band to how much money can I squeeze out of you before you crack or you're no longer profitable. And, you know, that's that, it kind of, I feel certain ways. I think we both agree on to some degree, but I'll acknowledge that that is, that has always been kind of the MO for them, for the industry, should I say.
I definitely agree. I think that a lot of the music that's on the top 40 charts, which is the songs you usually hear on the radio or the most popular stuff around, it all sounds the same, to be honest. Like, all the songs, they just sound pretty much the same. It's the same formula, same kind of hook.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because, like, there's probably some artists out there that have a much more deeper ability that is just not coming out because these labels are, you know, we need to make as much money as possible off of you. We know that this formula works for when we make songs. You're going to use that because it's in your contract and we told you to.
Right.
And if you don't, you know, goodbye. And I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of artists that who have gotten to the point where they can actually make their own record label. So they just leave the label they were on, start their own label, and do what they actually wanted to do in the first place.
Right.
But not every artist can do that. In fact, very few can do that. That requires a huge amount of, you know, investment that many artists just don't have.
Right.
So, I definitely agree with you there. And I think it's, there's a line between creativity and a profit-making machine, and there has to be a balance because, listen, the top 40 charts have sounded the same since forever. It's the same song over and over again. Like, honestly, that's really what it is, and it's kind of boring. And that's why people, and that's why I think, you know, Spotify and these other streaming services do get popular, is because you find what you want and what's actually genuine versus this stuff that is on the top 40 charts that just sounds like the same exact thing over and over again.
I wholeheartedly agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
So that's the financial piece. I think let's get into like some of the pros of being signed, right? I think a lot of these major labels will also give you access to professional guidance support, meaning they might have legendary songwriters who can help you write a song, or most of the time will write the song for you and you just have to sing it. There's also, you know, marketing experts, producers, stylists that you have access to, even legal help if you need it. So you're not in this industry alone. You have an entire team behind you navigating your path to success. And again, I think that's a huge thing that a lot of unsigned artists don't have, is just you have a team of people behind you who are paid to make you successful.
Right.
You also have, if you're on a major label, huge exposure just right away, pretty much. You know, these labels have strong connections with TV networks, radio connections, streaming platforms, media contracts. So your exposure immediately increases, and they can make you big literally overnight just because of the access that you now have to their network. So you can build your audience much faster.
Yep.
And then I think, you know, I kind of said this already, like tour, logistics support, resources, distribution, access.
Yeah.
And then, you know, royalty systems and partnerships. Now, this one we'll talk about too, because this can get a little confusing. But you do have access to royalty systems, meaning, you know, the company might take your song and place it in a big movie coming up or TV show or an ad. And all of that is just, you know, royalty, because it is part of your – that's your song or whatever, music. Mm-hmm. You're going to get paid for that. Right. And you have a team of people who will most likely help you track all of your royalties to make sure that you're getting paid what you're due. That's the very simple version of that, because it can be very confusing in terms of how royalties work, because it's not always simple. And it's certainly not you are the only person getting paid. There's now a whole team of people behind you who also get royalties, because it's not entirely your music anymore, especially if somebody helped you write that song.
Right. Like, just like what, just to add on to what you just said, like, if let's say your song is played in the next biggest blockbuster hit, right? Your label takes their percentage cut, which is to pay off the songwriter, that paid off the studio that allowed you to record that. They're looking at any way they can to take a percentage of what you made. And even if you, let's say you did all the hard work, but if you're assigned to the label, they're going to get their cut first based on whatever contract you signed or whatever agreement you have with them. So they get the percentage first, then you get what they will allow you to have. Now, that depends on the deal you sign with them, like I just said, but it is, unfortunately, about making the smartest decision you can with them. Like, and that's why it's so, that's why I love the new generation of artists that are being much more careful with their contract signing or the deals they make. Because a lot of artists in the past and bands in the past have just signed whatever. This is a lot of legal work. They're like, oh, we'll appoint you a lawyer. They'll give you a lawyer to help you read that over. The lawyer is signed to them. The lawyer is, you know, his retainer or her retainer is getting covered by the label. They don't have your best interest in mind. They'll tell you whatever. And that whole, I guess, as smoke and mirrors that they've done in the past is no longer as effective as current with artists today. Some artists are still falling for it. Not to be disrespectful, but they get caught up in these deals. But I think the artists and bands today are more aware and are more willing to fight back with their deals. And I do love that. I just wanted to point that out. I just thought that was I've been seeing that trend lately where they're saying no to certain deals. They're saying no to certain agreements. And the label doesn't really have a foot to stand on. And I kind of like seeing that.
And I think part of that is because artists are actually finally looking at their contracts.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
Like, they're not just paying somebody to look at it who actually may not actually look at the whole thing.
Yeah, that's also true.
They're reading their own contracts and seeing like, oh.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, you're messing me up on a lot of things here.
Yep.
But no, I think I agree with you. I think a lot of artists are getting wise to it and are saying no to deals that they don't want to do. Because they know in the end it's not benefiting them at all.
Right.
So
agreed. Yeah, agreed.
So let's jump into then, because that kind of segues nicely into what are the cons of being signed. To kind of go into that. So I think right off the bat is creative control limitations. A lot of the big labels out there, like I was saying earlier, control your sound, because they know what makes a hit, what makes money. So they don't, a lot of the time, a lot of the big labels out there, they don't care about your sound in particular, or how you write a song or your unique flair that you may add.
Right.
They go, that's great. This is what you're going to do, actually. And that, you know, that influences your sound. They take control of your image and the direction that you want to go in. So basically, they are steering the ship of creativity, and you are just there to do as they say. pretty much. It's really how it goes.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Especially on the major labels, it's very restrictive, creativity-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To add on to that, I actually, you know, I've heard stories in the past where, let's say, your favorite singer, rapper, artist, band wants to do a collaboration project or a collaboration song with an artist from a different label. Sometimes the label are saying, no, you're going to have to pick from our pool of artists that are signed to our label or signed to a label that they choose. And if that's the case, that song's not happening. Or the record label might either A, do nothing to help you, you know, create that song, or B, they'll develop something in your contract where there's a clause where you may not be able to release that song. And the label, but your own label will block it. That is a potential possibility for some people.
Yeah. And again, like they just want to do everything they can do to make as much money as possible off of you. Right. So they don't care about your creativity. They mm-hmm. just want to make as much money as they can.
Right.
And that goes into, I think, the next biggest con there of, like I was saying earlier, there's pros to the financial side of it, but the big financial con is a lot of the time, which I found out when I was kind of researching this and looking through, you know, contracts that artists sign, a lot of the time these major labels will give them, you know, advances. Mm-hmm. Large advances to sign with them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time they'll give them advances. Okay, you're going to use this money to make this record or whatever it is. But these advances, most of the time, they're not like gifts. It's not part of your salary.
Mm-hmm.
They're loans, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So you as the artist need to pay them back at some point, this money. Which can be a problem, especially if, let's say, an album isn't as successful as you thought it would be, or you still owe them that money, and they will get it back from you. Whether it's they take a percentage of your salary or whatever it is, they will get their money back. And a lot of, like, new artists who are signed, that's a huge problem. And a lot of the time, that's why a lot of these artists leave their label, because they actually didn't make any money because they had to pay back their label so much money.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's not always, you know, you get signed, you're automatically super rich and you're living a life of luxury. Most of the time it's, you're doing okay. But if your album isn't doing well and you still have to pay them back a ton of money, you're actually not going to be okay at all.
Now that's, you're in the negative.
Yeah. Your net worth is in the negative at that point.
That's true.
So, you know, that's a risk when you sign. Yeah. It really is. That's a big risk. These are not, they don't just give away money. These are loans that you do have to pay them back.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We've seen that over the course of the past decades. I've heard of the term 360 deals. And some artists sign that, they don't look, oh my God, this record label, they're major, they're, you know, they work with all these artists. I hear their stuff all the time. Oh my God, I can't wait to sign this. They sign it. And then they're supposed to, mind you, let's say I gave them $500,000. I'm just throwing a number out. They're like, okay, great. What do they do? First off, you got to pay your team. Then you got to pay to get the studio time to record the album. Then you got to pay engineers. You got to pay producers. You got to pay, if you had someone that helped you songwrite, then you got to pay your manager. And if you have one, then you got to pay, like, all that studio time, which, by the way, let's just say it could be $300 or $200 an hour. You're immediately seeing that money decrease so quickly. Like, and people are, artists, when you're young and you're excited and you're obviously, you feel like, oh my God, they're, This team is behind my dream, and all of a sudden I can be this, you know, this pop star or this mega, you know, mega star, and all of a sudden your album doesn't do well. Label don't care. They're okay, I gave you $500,000 and I wanted a percentage back on top of that. Where is it? Where is it? and hence why people have these difficulties. Yep. You know? Yeah.
And I think, again, this, you know, if you, if there's any artists listening to this podcast, get a lawyer, get a lawyer. Yes. Right away. Yes. And have them read through, along with you. You need to read your own contract, but have a lawyer read it who can explain all of the legal matters, because they're usually very thick contracts, and they really hope you don't read it. Like, they really hope you just don't and just sign it because you're so excited. And that's it, you know? And then eventually it's going to come back and bite you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that's a major thing with financial issues when signing. I think also another issue, and this has come up a few times, especially recently with a pretty major artist, ownership issues over owning your actual songs or owning what they call the masters of your songs, which are the original recordings, and then publishing rights. And this was a big case recently with Taylor Swift, where her entire, I think it was her first album, or was it her first album? I should have looked this up. I think it was Red. What was that album? Red?
I'm going to look it up for you now.
I think it was Red. Pretty sure it was Red. Please stand
by. Yeah, please. Just hang tight, people. We're just trying to find the answer. It is self-titled. Taylor Swift, 2006, October 24th. Her first hit was Teardrops on My Guitar and Our Song.
Yes.
Yep.
But the label essentially bought that album where she didn't own the rights to her own songs anymore. And she wrote a lot of those songs. Like, those were actually her songs. But the label and specifically bought them from her, and where to where she couldn't release or re-release her own music again.
Right.
So that's why she, I did a pretty smart move, and she re-recorded that entire album.
Wow.
She re-recorded it, and because then she has the rights, because that's a new album, technically, even though it's the same music. I don't know legally how that works.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about that.
So if there's any lawyers out there, please send us an email at musicmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
That was smooth. Well, go on.
Our legal team will reach out to you. No, but she re-recorded it. But then eventually she also bought back the masters from the label company because she's also a billionaire and she has that capability.
Yeah.
So where she, I think she now controlled that album, but she, because of her new re-recording of it, she just put that one out there and basically held on to the old version where no one could have it. So no one had control over it. But, like I said, it's a sticky situation where, you know, record label could buy your music and then you, the artist who made that music, can't release it because you actually don't own it, which is crazy. Unless you're Taylor Swift, who's a billionaire and you can buy it back from the label.
And actually, to add on to the masters thing, and I remember one of my favorite artists, Nas, was talking about he always wanted to do a song with Prince, and he reached out to Prince and he's like, hey, you know, I would like to work with you. And Prince said, I wouldn't. He wouldn't. He asked them a question. He said, do you own your masters? And Nas is like, Prince is like, call me when you do. And Prince's, I think, has been very, I think I would say most of his career has been very, I guess, I say anti-industry, but he's been very, very vocal about educating artists about the deals they make, about the music they write, the contracts you sign, the agreements you know, everything. And I that's why I think, and it kind of makes me sad. I mean, he's popular, but I don't think he gets as much recognition mm-hmm. as not only as a beautiful and talented artist, but at the same time for advocating for independence, for advocating for like just generally keeping artists and bands educated about how the industry works and trying to just tell them like, hey, you are the artist. You don't have to bend the knee to everything or if anything at all. And I think, and it makes me like, it kind of, I mean, he's obviously a legend, but I feel like he doesn't get as much respect in the sense that he doesn't know that, I mean, people don't really understand how much he was fighting for this. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really cool. So.
No, yeah. I think Prince, he was very savvy, very smart with mm-hmm. understanding the music industry, mm-hmm. all the legal terms, everything. Mm-hmm. And I think he was definitely anti-label, I don't think he was anti, I think he was just savvy to it. And mm-hmm. he knew how to get around and get what he wanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, very smart man. But I think along with ownership issues, it's also, there's a lot of pressure and expectations that artists face, mm-hmm. right? Of, you know, signing, it should be thought of like as any normal job, right? You have expectations, deadlines mm-hmm. you have to hit, mm-hmm. goals, performance demands. Like, it's just like any normal job. And I think a lot of people don't understand that is when they sign and they just think like, oh, I'm just going to go up there and sing my favorite songs and record my favorite stuff. Like, no, mm-hmm. it's a job. A company has now hired you to perform, to entertain, and there's mm-hmm. certain goals that you have to hit in terms mm-hmm. of financial goal or, you know, money goals you have to hit, mm-hmm. entertainment, you know, live performances, how many you have to do per year.
Right.
It's all out there. So just like mm-hmm. any other job, there's, you know, metrics to measure your success. And if you're not hitting it, mm-hmm. then goodbye. Like,
no, they will for real.
Fire
yeah.
you.
Yeah. That's actually a very good way of looking at it. And you're right. Because some people, I guess, you know, they know that artists and people can be eccentric with their creativity, and they don't understand that when you are signed to a label, you're right. It is a job. It is now you have a machine behind you that's expecting a return. There's people, there's teams, there's dozens of people that are hoping that you do your job and do your job well so that they can keep, you know, a profit so that they can maintain the machine that they have. So you're right that just like any job, you have expectations, you have, I don't know, quarterly goals, you have certain expectations, you have certain metrics you have to hit, year to date and all that stuff.
It sounds like a board meeting or something.
For real. At least you do have to do those too. You might have to sit down with the entire executive board about the rollout of your, I don't know. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
It's like, all right, we're going to have a board meeting. In this song, you only played these notes, and that's terrible. We want you to play these notes. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming to the meeting.
Yeah.
It's like, and here's today's agenda.
And yet again, just like real life, all that could have been an email. Just say it.
Best regards.
Best regards. Love that.
Thanks. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
No, but I mean, it's true. It's a job, and that's how they need to see it as.
Yeah.
And if a lot of these artists don't, especially the younger artists.
Right.
They don't see it as that.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
And I think you were talking about this too, where another big con, and I think we kind of mentioned this, but a bigger slice of your money goes to others on your team. So they mm-hmm. have to pay the managers, the label itself. Any of the legal teams or all the other teams they might have,
right?
They all get paid first before it comes to you. So by the time it gets to you, it's probably not as big of a slice that you would have liked.
Right.
And again, it's all based on performance. So if you are a very successful artist and, you know, you're on the top of the charts and you're selling a ton of records, or I don't even know. See, and that's another thing. I don't even think they really look at how much, like, your albums you sell anymore. It's more about streams.
Right.
And, you know, your visibility globally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because nobody, I'm not going on my iTunes anymore and buying an album. I don't even know if that exists anymore.
I don't even think so anymore. I think
it's just streamed everywhere.
Yeah. And I will say this, like, and when it comes to, like, streams, like, also, I don't know, some people do this, not all, not everybody. Like, if you have 12 songs on your album that releases on Friday, I, just being very honest, how much do you think the average person is listening through all 12? And then they might. I don't know.
And this is where, like, I think our generations are different.
Mm.
Because I remember when a new album would come out, because it would be on CD, and I was really excited. It was an artist who I really cared about.
Right.
I would go to my local FYE store and
pick it up. Mm-hmm.
And I would, most of the time, I would listen to it all the way through.
Right.
Because there was something about it in a physical state, like in a CD, CD case, because you got all the nice artwork and everything with it. There was something about putting a CD in and then, like, listening to every song. Yeah. I don't know. It's different now than, like, streaming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it's different, because really it's not. Because both formats, you can skip and do all the things, but, like, something about a CD and just listening to it all the way through.
Yeah.
It's different.
I agree with you because you're right. When I was, like, a teenager and any little money I got from my allowance, I would save up for my favorite artist or band will release an album. I'll use, let's say, this is a controversial opinion, but this is my first Metallica album that I purchased with my own money, which was Saint Anger. And I remember that because I listened to that song. I'm sorry. I listened to the album from cover to cover, song intro to ending. And I loved it. And yes, there's controversial opinions of people saying that's not their strongest album, but I think it was really fantastic to me. Maybe to my teenage years, it was just so much important. But anyway,
you were angsty, and that's...
Yeah, you know. Yeah, exactly. I wanted to burn and break stuff. But anyway, I'm kidding. But yeah, like... but you're right. But having that CD, I went to the store. I saw it. It was coming out. I was like, I really want that. And then I didn't, you know, I saved up, went there, bought it, went home, plugged it into my, the CD Walkman portable drive.
Put it on BearShare, share it with everyone.
Oh, that too. LimeWire. Oh, yeah. And then you listen to it and you're like transformed because you, like, this is something you feel like you own. Like, this is an experience cultivated to you because you feel like you own it. And you're right. I don't think that attachment isn't as strong as it is today. Maybe that's just a perception. Maybe I'm just perceiving it differently.
It could be. I mean, you know, we're not the Utes anymore, so we don't know. But it's certainly different, right?
Yeah.
At least, and I think that's what we're trying to say. It's like, it's a different experience where, because I know at whatever, 12 a.m. tomorrow, my favorite artist is going to have their new album. It's just going to be on my phone already. So I can listen to it. I can listen to it at my leisure when I'd like to.
Yeah.
Versus the CD. It's like, I have to go somewhere and buy it, wait in a line, pick it up, and put it in my 1993 Toyota Camry and blast it. Like, it's a different experience, right?
It is a different experience. Yeah.
So anyway, I don't even know where the topic went anymore.
Nostalgia, that was what it was.
But okay, I think it's just, you know, the bigger slice of getting paid goes to other people on your team.
Yeah.
So with all of this, right, we've kind of talked about the pros and cons. And I'm going to ask you first.
Sure.
Would you want to be a signed artist thinking about what we just talked about and knowing, and even your own personal experience, mm-hmm. you know, would you want to be signed?
The answer is, it depends on the deal, but the answer, for the most part, the answer is no. Just simply because as a artist, I have my own distribution deal. My music gets on Spotify, Apple Music. I don't run into any copyright issues. I don't run into any of those. I never, you know, because I'm making it. So it, I don't run into those issues. But if I were to own, if let's say Label X calls me tomorrow, we're like, hey, Pat, we'd like to sign you to this, you know, to our label. And I'd be like, the only thing that I would be interested in them for would be marketing and promotion. I don't need help with recording. I don't need help with whatever the case may be. I just need you to take that off my hands. It's things that I market and promote on my own, or if I need to hire someone or reach out to somebody to help promote my song, mm-hmm. they would do it for me. But if a Label X was like, hey, I understand, we'll take 20% of the streams, but we'll market and promote all of it for you. It depends. I would at least let the thought linger in my mind before I immediately say no, if that makes sense. But yeah. That depends. That really does come down to, like, depends on the deal. But for just knowing me as an artist, it would just be marketing promotion. That would be the only thing that would remotely interest me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get that. But I think I would agree a little bit with that. I think it depends certainly on the deal. You know, how much money am I getting out of this, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And I mean, I want you to do all the work. I don't want to do any work.
No, and you know, and the funny thing is, I say this among other, like, artists and groups, and I've said this before to them, like, a lot of them are like, oh, absolutely not to the label and everything. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I agree with you on 80% of it, but understand mm-hmm. something. Like, when I create music, I'm not naturally thinking about, I'm trying to make a hit, or how am I going to market this? How am I going to make content with this? How am I going to loop this into a meme or something? Like, my mind doesn't go there, and it naturally doesn't try to go there. So if I could take that stress off my mind, I would probably create much more. And if, you know, let's say whoever's a marketing, you know, person will say, I will take that and I will market that for you. That would be stress off my shoulders and my chest. But I think once you're in it, you're immediately aware, like, oh, the streams don't return as much as you think. You're not making, like, that's a whole different topic. But I say to some people, like, I don't want to use the machine because I do understand that there's a lot of stipulations and there might be certain, you know, and that's when you have to read the, you know, the contract and hire a lawyer, as you mentioned. But for marketing and promotion, my mind doesn't think that way. My mind thinks how can I make the most creative thing I can, or how can I think of a great project or an idea? Like, that's where my mind goes to. Yeah. I'm, you know, I don't think in that manner. So if I could take that off my shoulders, that's wonderful. Personally.
Get you. I think for me, right, mm-hmm. it's an immediate no.
Immediate no. Even if they willing to do the marketing and the promotion for you?
So, all right, let me be really clear and let me be really specific. Mm-hmm. If a small label, indie label, was coming to me and was like, hey, we want to sign your band. Because I would also be with a band. Like, it wouldn't just be me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say no. Because smaller labels are worse, I think. Because, really? Yeah, because they don't have money. They don't have any real financial power. So they kind of do that, the trap of, you know, we're going to pay for your recording and we'll pay for, your shirts and like your merchandise and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then it's like, oh, okay. And how much are you paying us? And they're like, yeah, we'll see. Like there's no salary with the smaller labels.
Right.
There really isn't. It's, let's see how successful you are, and then maybe we can split some profit.
Right.
But it's like, oh, but I can't live off let's figure out what your salary is going to be. That doesn't sound safe.
No, it doesn't.
So I
got a question for you, actually. Sorry to interrupt. I got a question. What if it was a major label?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. So if it's a major label, right, I would definitely consider. Mm-hmm. But I think to your point, I would hire a lawyer, first of all, mm-hmm. and read that contract. But then it all comes down to how much am I actually making steadily? Like, what mm-hmm. is my salary? What are you going to pay me consistently? And what are my percentages for, you know, bonus in terms of like performance, in terms of sales? What is the cut of profit I get? Like, I want to know all the numbers. Mm-hmm. And if the numbers are reasonable and it doesn't seem like they're totally going to mess me up, maybe I will consider it. But again, that's a major label.
Mm-hmm.
And that's them being very clear cut on all the numbers, which I don't think they do 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know. Otherwise, if it's a small label, even like a mid-tier label, I don't want to deal with it.
That's fair. I don't want to deal with it. That's fair.
So, because I think there's a side to being unsigned where you can be really successful. I think it's rare. I think it's hard to be unsigned and be super successful.
Yeah.
But it's been done. It's been done a few times. Mm-hmm. There's a few artists who have done it. And I was doing some research and frankly, I was a little surprised at some of the artists that I found.
Yeah.
So let's get into that.
Yeah,
let's talk about some artists who were successful. That now I'm going to preface it this because it gets tricky. Some of the artists I'm going to mention, or we will mention, may have been on a label at some point, but left that label, and were still very successful. Because I think that's also hard too. Is like you leave the label for one or other reason, and you try to make it on your own and. A lot of the time, that doesn't work either. But there's some artists on here who left their labels and were still very successful.
Mm-hmm.
So let's jump into it.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you want to start with...
Please. Oh, my God. Let's go. All right. Let's start with I'm going to start with Frank Ocean.
Okay. And fair enough.
Just simply because I've followed his, I guess, career from the beginning, like when his first, I guess, hit was like Novocaine and all these other songs, and then he used to release mixtapes. He was on Odd Future. Anyway, I love that Frank Ocean was a part of a label at one point, and then he left, then released his music independently, and obviously proved that it was just, it's him. It's all his artistry on his terms. And everyone knows the classic album Blonde, that everyone knows that like commercial and critical, like critics have nothing but like great, you know, responses about it. And it's such a fantastic album. And it proved that you can develop your own path outside the machine, if you want to call it that. Mm. So I have, and not only that, he's such an icon that if he wants to work with that artist, he wants to work with that. You could do whatever he wants. He doesn't have to release music. Blonde came out in 2017. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So that came out 2017. Like he doesn't have to, he dropped songs here and there, but he does it on his own terms. There's no, like label pressuring, like, hey, we need a new single to hit these quarterly goals for our label. There's no one. He does whatever he wants.
And there if anything, I'll quarterly goals.
Quarterly goals.
He most definitely has quarterly goals.
I'm sure.
He's got to make that money.
Yeah, he has to. But he does it in his own his own pace, and I honestly love that for him. And honestly, I'm inspired. Like, I would love to. I think, no offense, like he's not the first person to do it, but he's one of the most modern successes that we can think of in recent memory, where he developed a path and he left like a foot trail. Like, hey, if you want to do what I do, just do this. Mm-hmm. But you have to really, really believe in your talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, again, it's so incredibly difficult, and it's very rare for an artist to do and be very successful at it. But here's a person who had a goal, had the ambition, had the smarts, talent to do it, and just went out and did it.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go into an artist that I didn't expect to be on this list at all.
Oh, really?
And they were, here they are. Hanson. Hanson. Okay? We're talking about M-Bop. Okay? M-Bop boys.
Holy crap.
So.
Oh, man.
And by the way, I, not long ago, a few years ago, you know, Hanson, never listened to him really, except for, of course, M-Bop. Like, it was everywhere. And then I, you know, I forgot about them. And then I listened to their more recent albums when they're much older. And they are talented musicians, without a doubt. Like, their songs in their more recent albums are incredible. They can all sing. They can all play, like, eight different instruments. It's kind of ridiculous. Anyway, that's a whole another topic. But they were dropped. They were signed by Island Def Jam Records. But they were dropped because of creative differences. They didn't agree with their label, so they left. And they went off and started to make their own music. And then they actually made their own label in 2003. Now, of course, they had help from, like, their parents because they were young when they started. They were, like, teenagers or young 20s. But they were – they had the wits and connections enough. They made their own record. It was called 3CG Records in 2003. And they started to record their own albums on there, which most of them were extremely successful, if not hitting most of them, like, gold – level sales. And still touring successfully. Again, doing all of this without getting signed by a major label and just making their own label. But again, it was just the talent that they had and the wits that they had to go on about it, showing that, again, you don't really need a major label. Like, yes, it's extremely beneficial. But it is possible to be an independent artist and make it without a label.
Yeah. So. They, and for to do that for such a long time, it you really have to, well, like you just said, they're really talented in multiple different ways, but you have to really have the it factor, if that, if, for lack of a better word, to continue to persevere through that. As you just said, you know, it bumps just getting to the momentum that they developed, but for them to do that, they have to have, they have that it factor. And honestly, I wish artists like them, bands like them, groups like them are, and just artists in general that have done that, I wish they were more recognized for that. Not just for their obviously their artistry and talent, but just like that grit. I don't know, for lack of a better word, I can't think of it, but I commend it. I commend it so much to believe so much in your passion. Yeah.
That grit, determination, just that mindset of I want to be successful. I'm going to do whatever it takes and not give up. Yeah, it's shows that with perseverance, you can be successful.
Yeah, agreed. 100% agreed.
So let's go into... Well, I'm going to Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
Ooh, throwback.
Because they're an interesting bunch. So they were never signed to any label when they first came out. And still, they were never signed. They were independent from the start. But they recorded, they released and recorded their own album, The Heist, which I think... everyone in the world knows this album
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because it features that hit single Thrift Shop.
That controlled the air that day, that year, and maybe the second year too. Like that was everywhere.
And this again was all released through their own label that they made, which eventually he made into it's his own business, Macklemore LLC, which is his own label for self-release.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is he actually made a deal with the Warner Brother Group. Where they are just distributing his music now.
Okay. Okay.
But they are not his, like, his label. So he has complete creative control over his music. And, you know, Warner Brother just will distribute his music for him.
Right.
But it's just amazing. Like, here's another Macklemore and Ryan Lewis made their success digitally, all digitally. Came out with this album, The Heist, and had that hit single, Thrift Shop, which immediately just blew up and was everywhere. And now, you know, he, this is all, he still makes music, and I think he now produces music. But again, it's under his own label. He's still not with a major label at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that they saw the system. They was like, we're going to flip it on its head. And Thrift Shop, what was that, 2014? No, 2015? What year was that?
It was 20. Thrift Shop.
It was early 2010s or mid-2010s. And I'm talking about dominating, like, whether it was radio, whether it was social media, that was everywhere.
It's 2012.
Oh, geez, further back than I thought. Yeah. I thought it was, thing. All right. So more than a decade ago, and it like, especially in that era, gosh, they dominated. Anyway, so it shows that there's people that recognized the rules of how the industry works and decided, I'm going to play by my own rules. And if they have to work with it with a label, it's either purely distribution or marketing purposes, and I love that for them. Yeah. I love that for them. Yeah.
So I think all of these artists, right, they all have something in common, which is like they knew or they know of, you know, major labels, and they're taking a stand for their creative process, their creative art, and they're not letting them touch it or change it.
Right.
And instead of just agreeing to these things, they went out, either made their own labels or just released their songs and became successful.
Right.
So, and not by no means is this easy. By no means is everyone successful who does this. Otherwise, we would all be out there doing it every single day. But it can be done. And it's just a proof point of like, you can do it.
Yeah.
It's just how much are you willing to give to do it?
Yeah. I agree. I will say that as an artist, I know that when you release a song, you're trying to think about, like, should I make singles? Should I try to make things that are cliche? Should I do that? And it's a challenge to not say quiet that, but more like not take that as the driving force behind your music. I mean, to some who do that, I'm not discouraging people who do that. If that's your choice, that's your choice. But it is I know that there's pressure. I know some people who are signed to feel the pressure from the labels to make a record or a track or an album that fits a narrative that provides the most monetary value. I understand. It might be different. They might feel like they have to dilute their artistry or their vision to make money. And that is a challenge. That is a balance that artists and bands and groups have to kind of navigate. But I think the concept of being more aware, developing, like, you know, getting a lawyer, reading these contracts a little bit more carefully and making better decisions, I think this wave of generation of artists are much more clever and much more, I think, aware. And because of that, I think that, and then we've seen, obviously, we just listed several different record examples of people who've done that, who broke records, who achieved success on their own terms. And because they chose to do that and because they did that, I think it gave, and it gives me courage to be like, okay, there is a way forward without the sacrificing of artistry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Agree. And I think, you know, a few things to kind of clear up as we talk about this. Because kind of what I mentioned with Macklemore, independent or unsigned doesn't always mean empty-handed. So, for example, Macklemore, not that, because he isn't signed to a major label, he works with a label for distribution deals. So Warner Brothers helps him to distribute his music, but they do not have any say in his creative process. He's not signed to them as an artist. Mm-hmm. He is just simply really a client in terms of, I need you to distribute my music, because Warner Brother has such a huge reach. It's a lot easier for them, or it's a lot easier for him to let them just distribute his music rather than, you know, him trying to do it on his own.
All right.
And then I guess just thinking about, you know, commercial success doesn't always, is not equal to major label level fame. To me, and I think for a lot of artists, success really just means a substantial or sustainable career longevity. And you have like a devoted fan base, you have your own creative freedom, and consistent output, rather than having these huge, you know, blockbuster type songs every so often and a huge pop status. You know, those are, I think that's a little bit different.
Right.
I'm thinking just longevity versus extreme fame, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I'm going to reference to an example, to two examples. So I'm going to mention Jay-Z and I'm going to mention Nas. Now, if I'm willing to bet more money, people know who Jay-Z is before they know who Nas is. Now, Jay-Z is, without a doubt, a fantastic rapper, business mogul, extreme fame and everything. Whereas Nas did not have the exact necessary fame, but he had such a huge cultural backing and such a strong fan base that it was enough for him. Like, he creates such wonderful art, but he doesn't care if it becomes super popular. Yes, it's great if it becomes popular, but for him, it wasn't always a driving force. So, and obviously these guys have less, you know, had long careers and they're still making strides, but the difference in their careers was perspective. And I think it was back to what you just said. Jay-Z was like, I wanted to expand as much of my my fame as possible. And he did that without a doubt. And I think Nas is like, I care about longevity and cultural impact, which is what he aimed for. And they both accomplished their goals equally. And I think that's, I think it's, you're right. I think it's success, it depends on what you were trying to do in the first place.
So thinking about all of this now, you know, we've talked a little bit about pros and cons of being signed, talked a little bit about being unsigned, some of the successful artists. I want to hit this last point here of talking about challenges independent artists face without having a label. And I'm not going to go through every point, just because I think we've mentioned a lot of this already, right?
Yeah.
You know, lack of funding. That's a big one. Limited industry connections, right? Major labels have huge connections versus if you're some independent artist, you're not as big, right? But I think there's another point here, which I don't think we've really talked about as much. And I'm talking about the workload as an independent artist that you have. It can be overwhelming because when you really break it down, and if you're an independent artist who, you know, does this a lot, you really have to be like 6, 7, 8 different jobs. You have to be a songwriter, you have to be a performer, you have to manage yourself, a social media marketer, a promoter, a booking agent, a budget planner, content creator now, which is really important, and a brand developer. You have to be all of these things, which if you don't have a team behind you, that's extremely overwhelming. And especially because, and you know, Pat, but if you are, you know, a person who's, this is not your full-time job, you have a job that you have to do that is your full-time job.
Yeah.
Along with doing all of this, so it's it's essentially having two jobs.
Yeah, yeah. It's a challenge to release music and obviously balance work life, you know, whatever personal things you got to do, and then you have to create music. You have to create it in a certain way, which obviously takes time. Then you have to roll it out. Then you have to upload it. Then you got to reach out to people to help market it. Then you got to make deals. You got to pay that person. You got to pay this person. And then when it releases, you got to promote it. Yeah. 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 No, it is a lot. And I think, I mean, as time progresses, I've learned to develop certain strategies to help minimize time, but it still takes so much time. It takes, like, I think people don't understand, like, in the beginning process of starting a career or a music career, there's like, it's just me. It is just me. And if I reach out to people, I got to hire them. If I'm hiring a singer, I write the vocals, or I'm sorry, I write the lyrics and I sing it and I go back and forth. Can you sing it this way? Can you sing it that way? And I got to make a deal with them, and that might cost extra, and I got to pay that extra. So people don't kind of recognize that, but you're right. You absolutely right. You have to do like 5-6 different jobs before you possibly see return.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right on that.
And I remember even like being in a band where we had 5 or 6 different people in our band. And, you know, each one of us would try to do something, right? Okay, I'll call this bar to see if they'll let us play tonight. Can you upload an Instagram post or something? And while you're doing that, can you look at how much do we have to pay the bar tonight to let us play? Because that was the thing where you had to pay to play if you didn't, like, either sell all your tickets or whatever.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, how much money do we have in our collective whatever, blah, blah, blah. So, but even that, it's like, even when you have 4 or 5 other people, it's still a lot. So I guess, again, that's a big pro. When you sign a label, you have a team of people who will do all that. Another thing I think, and we mentioned this, is there's no built-in audience when you're an indie artist, right? So what I mean by that is you may have your fan base in your local area, your city, whatever. But now even with streaming, it can be outside, I guess. But it's usually no more than maybe a few hundred, like, listeners. And then, you know, your solid fan base, people who will actually come to your show.
Yeah.
Maybe like 50, maybe, maybe 100 if you're bigger, right? But with a major label, you automatically get access to thousands of people immediately. Who already probably like your music because they've listened to something similar. So they're gonna eat your music up. And then now your fan base has gone from 100 to probably 100,000.
Yeah. Or yeah. If you're
And so
I wanted to bring up, you said something earlier about expanding past your artist as you're growing. It is challenging if you are unsigned or independent, whichever you want to prefer. Like, it's challenging to get your core base to expand. And when you're making music, you'll be surprised, especially if you're on streaming platforms. I distribute music through SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Music. And the other day, SoundCloud let me know, I have fans in like Vietnam and Germany. And I was like, there's people in, like, you'll be surprised. But if you had a record label or a machine behind you, it would take that and add a jetpack to it. Mm-hmm. And they'll somehow use the algorithm, use the system that is already there to promote your music in a way where all of a sudden everybody knows who you are. They might even hear your song in passing through social media. They might have people who make content creation. They might use your song more often because it's bumped up in the algorithm. They're like, oh, use this song if you're trying to promote a funny meme or an interesting ad. Then your song gets played. So the machine is just adding on to what you're saying. The machine really would take whatever it is and add a jetpack to it, and you'll be surprised how not overnight success, but how quick it will change for you.
Exactly. And I think that's just, again, it's another big pro of getting signed to a major label.
Yeah.
And I think along with, you know, as an independent artist, you have to do all these jobs, right? Mm-hmm. It can be discouraging and you'll get burnt out. I mean, you're doing all this. Mm-hmm. And if you're not seeing a huge return, whether that's, you know, the amount of listeners or your fan base isn't increasing or people are actually stop listening to your music,
right?
That's discouraging. And eventually just you kind of get burnt out and you're just like, you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. like it gets to that point. And mm-hmm. I've seen that a lot. I've experienced it myself. And that's just the reality of it, I think.
Right. Right. And I agree with you, but I want to ask you a question actually. From your past, when you're going through venue to venue and you're playing, you know, your heart out for, you know, art, you know, maybe 50 people in a bar or a club or 100 people in a club. I wasn't saying. So I'm just saying, my question is
like 10 people in a club. It's fine.
Hey, whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah. People that showed up. But my question is to you, what was the motivation to keep you going? Like after 10 people showed up, how do you go to the next venue with the drive to put it on again and do it again?
Yeah, I think I think it's a couple of things. I think one, for me at least, I was happy even if 10 people showed up. Like that was mm-hmm. great. Because it's like, you guys came out here, you really want to hear our music on this Saturday night, you have nothing better to do, then that's great. And that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think though in the earlier days where we kind of cared a little bit more about how many people showed up, it was, you know, we just look at it from a standpoint of, okay, these 10 people came. Mm-hmm. Let's see if they can invite one other person to our next show. Cause then we'll have 20 people. Like how many of them can invite one other person? Mm-hmm. And what can we do for them to see if that will happen? Like sometimes we would get like free tickets where we would give them an extra ticket and say, okay, bring somebody with you. Mm-hmm. Or the other thing we would try to do is, so if we had people help us unpack all of our equipment, they would get inside for free. So we'd have a lot of people come and help us unpack. And then they could come inside for free. Mm-hmm. So it was just a matter, I think, for us of just thinking through, okay, what can we do to get more people to come? Like, and how else can we get our music out there? I think early days, because this was, you know, Spotify and all the streaming services were not popular yet, or I don't even think they were really around. I'm talking back in like 2010, 2012 days.
Yeah.
We would literally just burn our CDs on a, you know, burnable CD and with a Sharpie marker, just write the title of our album and just give it out to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had some success with that where people would like it and they would come to our next show. So in the early days, it was a lot of fun to see what paid off and what worked because we would see shows where we'd have 10 people and then all of a sudden now we had like 40, 50 people. So that was a lot of fun. But I think for me, it was around the mindset of like, I'm just doing this because this was fun. I like doing this. I don't really care. I mean, I cared for how many people showed up. Like if nobody came to our show, I would have been pretty upset. Thankfully that never happened. Somebody always came. But it was just more fun to see how many people can we actually expose our music to.
Yeah.
And see how many people actually like it.
All right. Right.
It's kind of how I thought about it.
No, that's actually a very good point, because I developed that. It's easy to get right down that rabbit hole, like, oh, I don't have as many followers, I don't have as many plays or whatever, comparative to other people. That's why that that old phrase, comparison is a thief of joy. And I didn't think I was growing that much as an artist until recently, when, you know, at the end of the, you know, just like Spotify is doing their Unwrapped, Apple Music's doing the Unwrapped, and SoundCloud is doing their Unwrapped. They're Wrapped. And they show you, there's also an artist side of it, where they show you your metrics for that year. Mm-hmm. And when I look at it, I grew substantially compared to last year. I mean, obviously it's not that many, but right when I was talking about it and seeing that, I felt so honored that, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 people extra now listen to my music, mm-hmm. or whatever the number is. And it's inspiring, but it's easy to fall down the rabbit hole. Like you said, like in the beginning, like I care about how people listen or show up or whatever the case may be. And then now it's like, you know what? I'm steadily growing, but at the end of the day, I'm developing a fan base, and that's okay. And it's easy to fall down that trap. So I agree with you what you're saying.
And I think that's the kind of the crux of this whole episode here, is, you know, signed, unsigned, is what do you want to do, right? Because there's pros and cons to both sides. Mm-hmm. And you have to really think about, you know, being an artist, what do you want? Are you okay with giving up some of your creative direction to get more exposure and to get more financial security? Or are you on the other side of it where you want full control of your creative output and you're okay with maybe not getting the same level of financial security along with other securities, I'm sure of, as long as you get to release the music that you want to release? And I think as an artist, you really have to think about that and think about, what am I going to do here? Mm-hmm. Is this just something, you know, I want to just, it's like a hobby, or is this something that I'm going to take really seriously? But how am I going to go about doing that? So, you know, there's pros and cons to both sides, like we just kind of talked about.
Yep.
If there's any artists out there listening to this, you know, hopefully this provided some clarity today.
Yeah. Hopefully.
But, you know, I think we're going to wrap this episode up and stay tuned for the next exciting episode.
Yeah. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you have an idea for an intro or an outro that we could play on our show, please send to musicmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
If you have any questions, comments, or ideas, please email us at musicmusingspodcast@gmail.com.